Rand Carthen stood pat throughout the entire 2024 NFL draft. Tennessee Titans general manager made all seven picks that he had going into the weekend. First time in at least a decade that the Titans did not make at least one deal during the draft. The emphasis this year, clearly on defense, after going with J.C. Latham in the first round. Five of the final six picks were on defense, beginning with the big man Tavondre Sweat in the second round, and going from there. We talked a lot about J.C. Latham late last week after the first round. We're here to look at the entire draft class in this episode of Believe in Titans. As always, with John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, how are you today?
I'm well, and you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm David Beauclair with the Nashville Banner. And, John, I mean, Rand Carthen talked about this. The absence of trades was not for a lack of opportunity, at least not early in the draft, right?
Yeah, you know, he said after the first round, I think the quote was they had a ton of offers to move back in the first round. But you know, his concern, and I think in the second round too as well, they had chances to move back. His concern, you know, primary concern is, you know, you're just not sure who you're going to wind up with, or who's going to be available if you move back. And I guess in Rand Carthen's mind, if you have certain guys in mind, as the Titans did apparently, at least in those first two picks, you know, they wanted to stick. They wanted to get their 700 pounds worth of humanity, and they did just that. You know, in both those situations, I think, you know, it's fair to raise the question of whether they could have moved back a little and got those same guys. You know, J.C. Latham was you know, generally, I think generally the board on J.C. Latham was probably more in the 10 to 20-ish range than where the Titans went. You know, you know, and even if you didn't get him, there's a guy, you know, like an Olu Fashanu, you know, or some of the other guys we talked about. Even if you didn't get him, you still pick up some draft capital and you still get a pretty good tackle. But apparently, you know, what they liked about J.C. Latham, the size, the physicality and so forth was too much. And then in the second round, you know, I think what happened to the Titans maybe in the second round, again, I think they might have been able to trade back and still get Sweat. But they were also looking at the fact that here they were at number 38. They weren't going to pick again until 106 at that point, you know, without any trades. And I think what they did, they saw a little bit of a run starting on defensive linemen. I think it was the Patriots and the Commanders had already taken defensive linemen. They knew they needed a giant guy, a space eater, a run stopper. And I think what they said to themselves was probably, look, we better get this guy right now that we like here, because, you know, we don't want to wait around and miss him. We don't want to wait until the fourth round. So I think, you know, circumstances and need sort of kept them in that spot at number 38 and wanting to take Sweat. So those are my kind of reasons why they didn't move back. One other, you know, area, one issue that maybe I had with the draft overall was not until maybe the sixth round, and that was when they picked up the wide receiver from Tulane, Jaquan Jackson. I would have liked to have seen, I guess I'm being the Virginia homer for my alums here, but Malik Washington, a slot receiver, was a real talent, I thought. You know, I watched him obviously a lot last year, and guy was an incredible weapon on a bad football team at 10 100-yard games last year, and really had a tremendous combine workout too. I think he's going to be really good, and Miami picked him up, so I think he's going to, like, two picks after the Titans selected Jackson, so I think he's going to do real good things there. But those are some of the questions in terms of trades and potential different selections that I had sort of right off the top of my head. I've got some other impressions too, but I'm hogging all the airtime here.
That's all right. It's interesting to me, when Rand Carthen says you don't make a trade there because you don't necessarily know what you're going to get. It's decidedly different language than John Robinson used to use when he would talk about the draft, and he would use the word intelligence a lot. Like he would talk about his intelligence, like he had this network of spies around the league. I don't know who he, if he had friends in, scouting organizations with other teams, or if he had people who could talk to people in scouting organizations. But he always talked about how he felt like he knew kind of exactly where he needed to be, and maybe that's just GM braggadocio, but there were times you could see like he would jump up in front of a specific team that had a need, and you'd think, wow, he felt like that was the spot that he had to get this guy. And Robinson made draft day trades in every one of his drafts. He was a guy who was always he. I've said this time and time again. He did not see it as a game of chance, I guess is the best way to put it. It was, this is the guy I want. Where do I need to be to get him? And Jack Conklin, I think his very first draft pick was a perfect example of that. Titans started that year with the number one overall pick, traded with the Rams, moved back to 15, and then all of a sudden on draft day, they jumped back up into the top 10 to get Jack Conklin, and it turned out to be a really, really good moves, I think, all around for him there. I guess Carthen doesn't have the network of spies, or at least people that he doesn't have the people that he trusts as much yet, maybe as Robinson clearly trusted his guys to provide him intelligence about what other teams were thinking. But here we are, like we said, with this draft class. The two big guys at the top of the class, I don't know if you've heard anything. I did a bunch of research immediately afterward. Near as I can tell, the Titans are the first team ever to draft two guys who are 350 pounds or above in the same draft, let alone with your first two picks in the draft. The closest I ever found was the Dallas Cowboys in 2021, or excuse me, in 2001, had two 350-pound plus rookies, but one was drafted that year and he was a seventh round pick. The other one was drafted 2 years earlier, also in the seventh round, and didn't make his NFL debut until 2001, 2 years later. So and Latham and Sweat are the two heaviest draft picks in franchise history, surpassing the legendary 350-pound Isaiah Wilson, everybody's favorite. So, whether these guys pan out or not, I think it seems awfully likely that they are going to be better picks, at least, than Isaiah Wilson was, which is not saying much.
Remarkably low bar,
Yeah,
yes.
remarkably low bar, but as I say, we talked a lot about J.C. Latham in our last pod, but so let's start with Sweat, who oh, by the way, was the Outland Trophy winner in 2023, at 6'4", 366. There's as I think for most guys that size, there's questions about his conditioning. He talked about it on draft day that he wants to lose some weight. He thinks he'll be better playing at close to 350 pounds. And then, of course, there was a DWI charge here shortly before the draft that I'm sure was a red flag to some degree for every team involved. Brian Callahan talked about that on the radio and said he was confident in what Rand Carthen and the staff determined about that, and as just a single immature act for a young man who's that age, as opposed to there's a serious character problem there. But There's a lot to like. There's a lot to question about T'Vondre Sweat, John. Where does your focus go sort of first as you look at him?
I guess what initially came to mind for me is that one issue is both with Latham and with Sweat, your first two draft picks, you have questions, right? You know,
Right.
ideally, you don't want to have any questions. You're like, okay, yeah, this is our need. This is our guy. Boom. We have no doubts about him. We're going to plug him in, and it's going to work. And with Latham, the big question obviously is, can he make the move from right tackle to left tackle? And then in your second round pick, you do it again. You pick a guy where everybody is asking questions again. And as you mentioned, the big concerns are A, the conditioning, you know, how much he can play, at what weight he is comfortable, and the DWI, which happens just a couple weeks before, you know, one of the biggest nights of his young life, that a large chunk of his future earnings are going to be determined. You would think he'd be thinking a little bit wiser, a little bit more maturely at that point. So yeah, I don't like the fact that both those first two picks immediately raise questions. That said, I'm not as down on the Sweat pick as I think, you know, a good chunk of fans are. You know, originally I think he was basically considered a second round pick until the DWI, you know, until maybe some questions were raised, and then maybe the thought was he'd be third or fourth. But I think the talent level, you know, is probably second round. And I don't think that he is just necessarily a first and second round, or excuse me, a first and second down defensive player, which is the concern of a lot of people. What are you doing? You're drafting a, you know, a space eater, a run stopper who's not even going to be in on third down. But I don't think that's necessarily the case based on, you know, the numbers that you see. You know, he's not a guy that's going to rack up incredible sacks. You know, he had two last year, 8 tackles for loss, 4 passes batted down, but he can still impact the passing game, you know. And Brian Callahan talked about it afterwards too. He said the toughest guys for offenses to prepare for are the guys that collapse the middle of the pocket. He says you can do things with guys coming in on the edge. You know, you can chip. You know, you can arrange various strategies to kind of neutralize them a little bit. But it's much more difficult to neutralize a guy who is consistently crushing that pocket. And I think that's possible, you know, for a guy like T'Vondre Sweat. You look at the numbers, the PFF grades, for instance, last year. Overall, 91.7 is great. Rush is tremendous, 92.0. Everyone knows he's going to be a huge load to move in the run game. But the pass rush too, 85.3, which is pretty very good. And the pass rush win rate, 15.3%, which is very high also. So again, not the sacks, but he's a guy who had hurries. He had 26 quarterback hurries last year, so he's impacting the rush that way as well. So I think that's important. As far as the character, I like the fact that the Titans, you know, did seemingly do their due diligence. A, as we talked about, I think last week or the week before, maybe. You know, T'Vondre Sweat met with the Titans the day after the DWI. So if you're going to get, you know, a guy in a vulnerable position and really find out a lot, I would think that would be the day he gets it, that you get as much info as you can. And then not only that, but they sent down, you know, Rand Carthen, I think Anthony Robinson, I believe Brian Callahan, at least as well, down to T'Vondre Sweat's hometown before the draft, you know, talk to the family, to talk to him some more. So doing some due diligence there. Throw in also the fact that he's going to have a pretty good influence in Jeffrey Simmons, a guy who came into the draft with a big red flag, but has nonetheless made the most of his opportunity since then. I think Big Jeff thanked Brian Callahan for making that pick, by the way. Is going to have a good influence on him. And his former teammate, Keandre Coburn, now with the Titans, his former Texas teammate, is there as well, and seemingly would be another good influence on him there if the addition of Devondre Sweat doesn't knock Keandre Coburn off the roster, of course. So I kind of like this pick. There's a lot of reasons not to like it. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, to your point that there's question marks with the top two picks. Like, I laugh at myself. Draft grades, post-draft grades, they're meaningless, right? Like who knows how these things, you need years to watch these things pan out. But I am 100% susceptible to these things. I read the draft grade reports. I get caught up in them. I want to see what people are saying. You can't find, at least I haven't, tell me if I'm wrong, you can't find anybody who loves this Titans draft.
No, there's one. I think NFL.com was the only one who maybe had an A minus. Everything else has been, not ripped to shreds,
Right.
but
But it's a lot of C pluses and right, down
Which you
there
don't
is,
usually see a lot, you know?
exactly. And the exact thing, and it goes back to, Rand Carthen standing pat too. Everybody says, like you said, Latham was, most people figured 10 to 20 range. So theoretically you could have moved back, still gotten him if that's the guy you really wanted. Sweat, people are talking about him as a guy you could have gotten in the third round, not near the top of the second. But the question of Sweat and whether he's a three down player doesn't bother me. If he's only a first and second down player, but he's a dominant first and second round player, and he forces, he's a big reason that offenses are in third and eight and third and 10 and third and 12 all the time, whatever, I'm great with that. I just think back to one of the great Titans menaces of all time, Sam Adams, who was on those Baltimore teams in 2000, 2001. Oh, by the way, a 350-pound guy in his own right, a guy that the Titans felt like they had to pretty much double team every single snap because otherwise he was just going to do whatever he wanted in the interior of that line. So if teams look at Sweat and go, look at the size of that guy. We've got to double team him, and that leaves Jeffrey Simmons one-on-one more often. I'm great with that on first and second down, and then you let things go. There are questions about his conditioning and his consistency, and that sort of brings to mind to me two former Titans players. I think back, and one of them is Albert Haynesworth, and I first thought of Haynesworth. I think it was in Rand Carthen said it during the pre-draft press conference this year. He was talking about blue chip guys, and he said they're the guys, like, it doesn't matter what game you grab, what piece of tape you grab, you put it in, you're going to see this guy making plays over and over and over again. Albert Haynesworth, for example, was not one of those guys. I remember the day Albert Haynesworth was drafted, and we asked about, I think it was even I who asked the question, and the scout was Cole Proctor was at the time, and he said, well, if you go to, and he pointed to a very specific game and a very specific play that Haynesworth made that said it just showed what kind of athleticism this guy had for a man his size. And Haynesworth had his moments for the Titans. Let's be honest with that. But I don't think anybody would consider Albert Haynesworth to have been a consistent performer game to game, week to week, other than the one or season to season, other than the one big season he had. Another guy, though, who comes to mind is Robert Smith, a guy who was drafted late. I want to say he was a fifth round pick, and despite having a really, really good career at Michigan State, and the knock against Robert Smith was that he didn't play hard every down. And I remember we asked Robert about that moments after he got drafted on the conference call, and he was so nonplussed by it. He said, look, he goes, I'm the best defensive lineman on this team. I played 70 to 80 snaps a game. I get tired. He said, I'm sorry about that, but he said, you put me in the NFL and let me play in a normal rotation like the NFL uses. And it's funny, by the end of his time with the Titans, like there was nobody who had a better reputation for working hard and particularly playing hard than Robert Smith. So, there can be reasons sometimes for the inconsistency. Maybe it is that attitude, or that just lack of something that keeps you from being great all times, or maybe it's just that you're so good, your team's asking you to do too much, and you're not capable of that. So, which side of that sweat falls on, we'll have to see. But I think it's informative to think about both of those guys, and one of them, he's gonna turn out that he's gonna remind us more of one of those guys than the other. I think when all is said and done, after
I
oh,
was
go
just going
ahead,
to
John.
toss in one set of numbers that have been kind of making the rounds as well too. I believe these are PFF numbers also, but in terms of being on the field and regarding conditioning as well, DeAndre Sweat played 503 snaps last year, played 464 the year before. Compare that, Byron Murphy, his teammate at Texas. Another very large and very talented man who was the number 16 overall pick in this year's draft, played 438 this year. You're looking at DeAndre Sweat playing 60 more snaps over the course of the season than Byron Murphy, who was the number one or a number 16 overall pick this year. So that bodes well. But I think. Again, I'll say I think the influence of another influence like Big Jeff on DeAndre Sweat and Coburn, assuming he's there as well. I think those are going to be positive influences that are going to kind of lead him in the right direction. So yeah, I'm still like I say, I'm okay with this pick. I don't have as much many problems with it as a lot of fans seem to.
Yeah, and after Sweat, of course, the Titans just rode out the rest of day two with nothing in the third round, and then on day three, linebacker Cedric Gray from North Carolina, cornerback Jarvis Brownlee from Louisville, wide receiver return man you mentioned earlier, Jaquan Jackson out of Tulane, linebacker, a safety actually who's going to be a linebacker, James Williams, and then edge rusher Jalen Harrell. Anybody in that group who particularly caught your attention, John?
I guess you'd have to say Gray. I think because that was a big need for the Titans as well, and for a couple other reasons too. They say, despite the fact that he is a rookie, he's the kind of guy with enough smarts that he was kind of the defensive play caller for 2 years at North Carolina, that he might potentially be the green dot guy even as a rookie. Assuming his play. Gets him on the field as well, in this coming season. And he has enough athleticism, I think, that he's the kind of guy who, might be able to hang with tight ends, be a three down guy himself. I like their last pick. I think that's kind of a nice guy to have, Jalen Harrell, 6'4", 247 on the edge. I think they needed some depth on the edge. We talked about that. And anytime you can get at a guy at pick 250 or whatever it was that had 7.5 sacks, 10 tackles for loss on the national championship team, I think that's a pretty good pick. A guy can play a lot of special teams as well. I like Jackson, the wide receiver out of Tulane, potentially good returner. Especially given the changes we're going to see in the kickoff, might be a reason they took him. He returned a lot of kicks and did pretty well in that regard, and his productivity from the slot was pretty good as well. Averaged about, I want to say, 16 yards a catch and wound up with 17 TDs on just 109 catches in his career. So that's good. However, as I mentioned earlier, I still would have gone with my guy, Malik Washington, from Virginia. 110 catches last year, 1,400 yards, 9 touchdowns, and he was the only weapon on a bad Virginia team. Had a great combine, like a 42.5-inch vertical. Really, a really good player, I think. I would have gone in that direction. Mike McDaniel, they showed him making the Malik Washington pick down in Miami, and he gave the big fist pump. So we'll see how the comparison of Malik Washington and Jaquan Jackson goes.
Yeah, Jaquan Jackson is interesting to me too, because he's of course out of Tulane, which is the school that produced Tyjae Spears last year, and you know, Tulane has had a pretty good run here the last couple of years, and you typically see these mid-majors that get on these good runs, and a lot of times it gets a coach a job at a bigger school and whatnot, but what you see is that it's not, I think it's not so much the coach who has a big impact, other than the fact that he somehow or another put together a better than normal roster in a small window there, right? And I mean, you look at this Tulane team and what they did 2 years ago in the Cotton Bowl against USC, where they outgunned USC 46-45, and you know, it tells you that there were really good players on that team, that you know, that you could match up athletically in a track meet like that with USC. And you know, we all saw what Spears did last year, and you know, my guess is that Tulane is probably going to be very much into a decline, go back to being just more, you know, sort of a normal mid-major, non-power five, whatever you want to call them in college football these days, as these guys cycle up. But you know, it's easy to see when you watch Tyjae Spears last year, like, wow, okay, that guy is better than what Tulane typically gets. You know, I can't say I watched Jackson play, but I have a sneaking suspicion that maybe he's another one of those guys who helped make Tulane better than Tulane typically has reason to want to be or think they should be. So I think a guy like that is really intriguing. Obviously, you'd like to see him be a little bit bigger than he is, but you know, there are guys who can make a living in the NFL being slot receivers and return men, and you know, that and then James Williams, again, the guy, you know, I mentioned the first of the three or first of the 2 7th round picks. Anytime you're asking a guy to change a position even before he gets in the league, I think is interesting. But you know, there's something to be said for the way the game is going. If you take a safety, I think, you know, we probably do have to think about linebackers, the inside linebackers, differently these days, because pass coverage is becoming so much more important all the time in this league. And I think, you know, and even that's the knock against Cedric Gray, right? The third round or the fourth round pick is, he's got good instincts. He's a great tackler. But he's maybe not the best pass defender. And you can almost see a Cedric Gray, James Williams platoon, right? If between the two of those guys, you came up with a complete player, that's not the worst thing, I would say. You know, I don't know that anybody said that's the way they were looking at this thing, but it sort of makes sense in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And what I like about the James Williams pick too is, again, you're looking at a 7th round pick. And to me, when you're in the 7th round, I kind of like, you know, those picks that you're taking a little bit of a chance that there might be an upside somewhere. That, like, you know, you're not necessarily taking a guy who's already reached a ceiling. You pretty much know exactly what you're going to get. You know, when you're in the 7th round, why not take a little bit of a chance? And I think maybe that's what they did here with James Williams. As you said, he's changing positions from safety to linebacker. But I think he's a guy that looks like is really a lot of raw potential there. You know, 6'4", 230 pounds, really long arms. We know how important that is, David.
We do know how important that is.
That's right. Just very athletic and yeah, gets high marks, you know, for maybe being able to match up with tight ends because of that size. So I like that fact that they took a little bit of a chance. Maybe if this guy pans out, there's upside there that then, you know, he winds up being maybe a better pro linebacker even than he was in a college safety. You don't know. And then I guess the other guy we didn't really touch on in the draft there was Jarvis Brownlee, the corner from from Louisville, who to me kind of it's sort of like in the mold now, I think, of what we'll see from Titans cornerbacks. You know, a reputation of being a physical, tougher cornerback, much like Chidobe Awuzie and L'Jarius Sneed as well, have the same kind of reputation. And you know, you can say, great, hey, wait a minute, the Titans have three solid corners, but after that, the drop off is fairly significant, and you always need more cornerbacks. You know, you're never going to go wrong taking a corner. I'm kind of curious to see where he winds up. You know, I think there's a lot of talk of nickel, and he said he could play both, but in college he was like 1,800 snaps on the outside and just about 130 as nickel. So nickel is not as much a part of his background as being on the outside, but not great speed, like a 4.5 guy, not awful. But the good side of his of sort of his stat nugget last season, opposing quarterback rating only 51.4. Downside, he gave up four touchdown passes and 13 over 3 seasons. But again, I'll say in the mold, that physical aggressive mold that apparently, Denard Wilson and the Titans are looking at right now.
Yeah, the Trey Avery era with the Tennessee Titans could finally be over here. It looks like we mentioned that Williams, a safety in college, they have no interest in him playing safety here. They didn't draft a safety. Rand Carthen has made it known that they are likely to sign a safety at some point, and there are veteran safeties. We've mentioned this once or twice before. There are veteran safeties still kicking around out there when you talk about Justin Simmons, Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, Micah Hyde. I mean, these are good, proven players who could who could come in and have an opportunity to log big snaps for these for this team right away. Justin Simmons is the one I think you have to go get if you can. Obviously Titans are filling in roster holes too with undrafted free agents, but and anywhere else that you see, John, that needs a little more attention at this point.
Yeah, I think tight end still needs some addressing here. And they talked about that early on, leading up to the draft, that tight end was certainly a position that they needed to add depth. Really, the only three guys are Chigo Konko, Josh Wiley, and Thomas Odokoya. Obviously, not a great deal of experience in there, and you're going to add some bodies now. The undrafted free agents, it appears they've added at least a couple there. Steven Stylianos from Iowa, 6'5", 235, didn't do
Which has
much.
which creates good tight ends. There's reason
Yeah,
to like that.
exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, if you're going to grab any schools, UDFAs, Iowa's a good place to go. And then the other guy, seems to have a little bit more productivity in his background. 6'4", 245, David Martin Robinson out of Temple, had 40 catches for 537 yards last year and four touchdowns. Played 6 years at Temple, so seasoned. But I still think maybe a little bit more, maybe an experienced guy is out there. Maybe you take a look in that direction from tight end as well.
Well, we will look to the future because this episode of Believe in Titans is now finished, a part of the past. And we thank you as always for listening, John Glennon. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir.
And until next week, this is Believe in Titans.